Donald Byrd on trumpet and Pepper Adams on baritone sax, opening up on Kuro's, beloved jazz joint in Milwaukee where many a great jazz great, including Herbie Hancock, featured here on piano, got the big break. Lamon Jackson on bass and Jimmy Cobb on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrace Lead, and you'll need a piece of paper and a pen or pencil because it's going to be a detailed program today. First, let me apologize for starting late. We did have a little bit of fundraising to do because that's what we have to do to keep PRN going, but it wasn't too long an inconvenience to us. So let's start with the program today. And the program is raising the question, did Barack Obama protect the renegade Clinton's massive charity fraud scheme? And our guest says, yes. We add another chapter to this long-running series on the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation and affiliated entities, which together were operated as nonprofit organizations doing, quote, good works, unquote, but in fact were multi-million dollar money mills for the family that defied and continue to defy domestic and foreign laws that regulate charities. Charles Ortel, a retired Wall Street banker turned financial investigator, he exposed rampant stock overvaluation on Wall Street that led to the 2007 crash. And for almost 3 years, he has been following the Clinton Foundation's labyrinthine money trail. His reports have kickstarted probes by several governments who had contributed billions, that's with a B, billions of dollars to the foundation's purported charities. But here in the United States, the Clintons have received unprecedented protection and at the highest levels of government. Today, we are going to be talking about President Obama and key members of his administration, who, according to Charles, appears from the investigative work he's been doing, appear to have given the Clintons massive cover for their massive schemes. Charles, thanks so much for being with us today.
It is my great honor always to be with you, Eutrace. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's start at the beginning. When you say that the Clintons were able to proceed and carry on this massive, you call it the largest unprosecuted fraud in history, not just American history. You say this is one of the largest charity frauds in history. How does the Clinton Foundation manage to conduct these shady dealings with a government that's supposedly well run?
Well, I think what the Clintons did, and it's very interesting. I had a gentleman on my own podcast named Lee Stranahan, who is a veteran investigative journalist. He's written for many different publications, and he also has his own show, I think on RT. At least he had one on RT. He reminded me, or he told me for the first time, that while Bill Clinton was at Georgetown, his mentor was a professor whose specialty was exposing English charity frauds back in the 19th century. And so I actually think it's possible that Bill Clinton, who is by all accounts, you know, he has no moral compass, but he's very smart, which is possible, sadly, to be. He probably saw this charity fraud area as the perfect scam and had in the back of his mind that he might use this scam, and then got the opportunity to use the scam beginning October 23rd, 1997, when he was really at knife's edge. I mean, that's if you go back into the chronology as I have done in minutiae, you see that that's precisely when the Clintons really almost met, you know, the equivalent of their, you know, their maker politically, in the sense that the lamestream journalists then had decided to make an issue of the Clintons' illegal bounty derived by tapping foreign donations to the First Presidential Legal Expense Trust. So they had to shut that thing down at year-end 97, while at the same time they'd use every ruse in the book to forestall an investigation into the Paula Jones accusations. They sort of this privilege and that privilege, and ultimately the Supreme Court in the middle of 97 said, look, you just can't use these spurious privileges. The lawsuit proceeds. So just when they needed money, their then vehicle for scamming money, the Presidential Expense Trust, whose books have never actually been formally accounted and reviewed the way they need to be, that thing had to be shut down. So he escaped, as we all know, impeachment, and even Hillary Clinton, it's well known, decided that the impeachment saga might be used adroitly, as it was, the fundraising technique is a gimmick, both for Democrats generally and then ultimately for Hillary specifically to win her Senate nomination and then race in 2000. So they had ample opportunity while Bill was still president in the lame duck period to scoop up as much information as possible, and more importantly, on enemies and rivals inside and outside the Democratic Party. They also had the ability to insert people like Lois Lerner into the IRS to protect, in my view, the charity from ever being investigated. Lerner sat at first in a special letter or special rulings department of the IRS, the tax exempt portion of it, examining complex charities like the Clinton Foundation. And then in 2000, late in 5, early 6, she was put in charge of that whole unit, which means, I think, that she was able to stop any investigations from happening after James Comey, Robert Mueller, and Ron Rosenstein failed to see the obvious tax frauds between 2001 and 2005, when the FBI was indeed investigating, and when grand juries were impaneled. So the Clintons decided, I would argue, to play dirty a long time ago, and they quickly figured out, as you know, history shows, a very small number of people in any national government wield enormous power. You know, that's how the communists took over Russia. That's how the American revolutionaries took over control of the colonies in 1776 and afterwards. You figure out you don't actually need millions of people to take over a country. What you need are a crooked attorney general and a crooked head of the IRS and crooked functionaries in justice, the IRS, and other places. And that's what the Clintons figured out. That's what I think they inserted into these various departments. And so they knew they had protection, even while Bill was outside power, formal power, and Hillary was just a mere junior senator from New York. Even then, they were able to stymie the W. Bush White House, in part, I think, I would guess, because they had files on W and HW. And then the real anomaly for me, the real curiosity starts in November of 2008. And if we think back 10 years ago to those times, those were perilous times, remember? I mean, there was a moment in there where the stimulus bill had been put up and, prior to the national election, or a stimulus bill had been put up, and Congress voted it down. And that was in the October of 2008, from memory. And the market crashed, I think, I want to say it was like almost 800 points at a moment in time when the Dow was more like, 8,000 heading down to 6,000. That was a gigantic drop in percentage terms. And things were rickety. And here Barack Obama wins his election on November 4th, 2008. Now, I would, argue in hindsight that a moldy tuna sandwich would have beaten John McCain. He ran such a horrible campaign in 2008, kind of like Hillary ran in 2016. But nonetheless, here's Barack Obama winning, and history shows that even in victory, he and Valerie Jarrett were under FBI suspicion for Jarrett's possible role in selling Obama's Senate seat to the highest bidder, possibly in league with Rod Blagojevich, the then governor, now felon, in Illinois. So there is a window, as Donald Trump saw, between an election victory and inauguration, where even a president-elect is vulnerable. You know, it is possible, as we see in this thing playing out now, the Mueller, Comey, Rosenstein sessions, et cetera, derailment attempt of Trump. It is possible, although it hasn't happened, I don't think ever, but it is theoretically possible to make an elected president decide that that person does not want to put his or her hand on whatever document they choose and swear the oath of office at noon on the 20th of January. It is possible to derail that. So what is really, really curious to me, I am not a political animal, but I think I understand how some of these people think. Here you have an historic person. I may disagree strenuously with Barack Obama's economic and even some of his political ideas, but I will willingly concede that for eternity he will be an historic figure. And here's an historic figure who wins not a, you know, a little victory, a commanding victory over lame brain McCain, but more importantly, he wins control of the House, control of the Senate. He has a clear mandate to do what he wants to do. So please explain to me why, oh, why his top person, Valerie Jarrett, would put her signature on November 16th, 2008, onto a document which is riddled with lies about the Clinton Foundation, that manifests that rather than being a real legal agreement, and I have a piece coming out today, actually, in LifeSet that explains the details for those of you who don't want to write all this stuff down. The memorandum of understanding that was constructed by November 16th, 2008 is a packet of lies. It describes in about, I forget if it's 4 or 6 pages, but it's a number of pages long. You'll see a link to it, the real memorandum of understanding. There are two versions of it. There's one that Clinton and Obama circulated to their 98, you know, colleagues in the Senate. Remember, both of them were senators at the time. And there's supposed to be a club that, you know, you don't lie and cheat to your fellow senators. Nonetheless, these two senators circulated a fictitious document, a memorandum of understanding, which repeated lie after lie after lie concerning the then state of the Clinton Foundation, which was a basket case by November 2008. It calls it, you know, it says that it is one legal entity consisting of a bunch of initiatives. None of that is true. There's not a single word in that memorandum of understanding that actually stands up under any kind of close scrutiny when you look back into the record, as I have done, and when I give in this article a pathway for viewers and hopefully investigators to check what I'm saying. You'll see for yourself. The Clinton Foundation, the version of their annual report concerning 2007, which was due by November 17th, 2008, that year, 2008, November 15th, fell on a Saturday. And the way the tax laws work is the due date, if something falls on the Saturday is the next legal business day, which would have been the Monday, the 17th. So the filing due the 17th wasn't even turned in on time. It was turned in on the 19th. So 3 days after Valerie Jarrett affixed her signature to a memorandum of understanding that is fraudulent, they file a tax return that is fraudulent with the feds. And we don't yet know where they may have filed the tax return in various states and foreign locations, but it was a packet of lies which attempted to conceal the fact that the largest piece of the Clinton Foundation, an entity variously called Clinton Foundation HIV AIDS Initiative, Clinton HIV AIDS Initiative, William Jefferson Clinton HIV AIDS Initiative, all sorts of different funny names. That entity had had its authority to operate in the crucial state of Massachusetts, where its headquarters was physically located. It was involuntarily revoked with effect from December 31st, 2007, on March 31st, 2008. That is a material fact that your largest by far operation had its authority to operate involuntarily revoked is a strictly disclosable item under New York law within 30 days of the event actually happening. So that event should have been disclosed by April 30th, 2008 in the heat of the campaign when Hillary was still running for office. Instead of disclosing it, they made a decision to attempt hiding it. They put on their website, and I provide their links so you can see this with your own two eyes, people who are interested. I hope some investigators are listening. I hope maybe some investigators in New York are listening. You can see for yourself that the version of the Clinton Foundation audit, It's not really a legally compliant audit, but that version nonetheless has two crucial pages omitted on the Clinton Foundation website, which can be found on either the New York State Charity Bureau website search, or if you're really looking for extra credit, you can go onto the California Registry of Trusts. You can see what I'm talking about there. They're the missing two pages, which show clearly that this Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS initiative was a gigantic piece of the puzzle, and also shows that the auditors did not bother to investigate the rot in that HIV/AIDS thing for which the Clintons take so much undeserved credit. I mean, why would you run around the world, you know, bragging about the fact that your largest operation is a fraud? It was shut down by the regulators in left-leaning, Democrat-controlled state of Massachusetts. Why, you know, why brag about this? So anyway, this is all stuff that had to be fresh in the minds of people running the Clinton Foundation, specifically the CEO, Bruce Lindsay, of the Clinton Foundation, had to have known this. And yet, nonetheless, allowed his signature to be affixed and then used this document. If you go into the transcript of the confirmation hearing for Hillary Clinton, several senators, specifically, I think one down in Texas whose name escapes me at this moment, might have been Cornyn, I may have that wrong, but a senator, at least one senator, made an issue of the obvious potential conflicts of interest between the Clinton Foundation. It's among the Clinton Foundation, its various international operations, and U.S. government policy affecting both donors to the Clinton Foundation as well as recipients of putative aid from the Clinton Foundation around the world. People made an issue of that. So I, you know, when I got into this, I know enough, having been involved in lots of business dealings with lawyers, to know that a memorandum of understanding is a garbage document. There's no point in actually signing a memorandum of understanding.
I was just coming to that. Thank you so much for heading me off at the pass there. I was just going to question this memorandum of understanding stuff because it has no real legal value.
Right. It's like an agreement to agree. It means absolutely nothing. It's the kind of thing that UN bureaucrats like to spend a lot of time on because it gives them an excuse to write off even more expensive meals and travel, you know, for sitting around a table negotiating, you know, word by word and then translating those stupid words into various languages on a document that is unenforceable means nothing. You know, and that's what some top lawyers told me when I was a, you know, starry-eyed, less than 1 year experienced associate in an investment bank. You know, before you waste a lot of time considering a legal agreement, you better understand whether it means anything. And
let's
so a legal
let's connect some dots here, Charles. Okay, so Hillary Clinton loses the election.
Bigly.
Barack Obama comes into office, and we find some key people, Valerie Jarrett being one, being very key in the Obama administration. So she is a kind of bridge, if you will, between the Clintons and Obama. Is she, in your view, undertaking these actions on her own, or do you think that she is a kind of go-between between the Clintons and Obama?
I think that she was, you know, she was a cipher. I mean, I actually think there are people who believe that in having met Barack Obama, I have not met Barack Obama, but their people believe that he's fundamentally not that smart, and that he was basically, you know, the campaign was run very well. Let's give him credit for running that campaign. Honestly, the 2008 campaign of his was a masterpiece. I mean, Hillary was supposed to win the primaries, and he blew away Iowa, and he blew away the primaries, and he blew away the Clintons, and he blew away McCain, and he did so without really engaging in much ad hominem argument. I mean, it was actually a pretty classy campaign, all told. You know, in the end, did it mean much? I don't think so. But he, your starting place is, who was giving the orders? Remember, when we go back into this timeline, you know, November 4th is a Tuesday. November 11th is a Tuesday. I believe November 14th or 15th was Valerie Jarrett's 50th birthday, and I believe on the Friday, whichever date that was now, the 14th, I believe she was formally nominated to be his, you know, top consigliere. And there was a press release went out in that day. So on the Saturday, she's celebrating her birthday. I've spent actually more than 3 years investigating the Clinton Foundation. And even I find out stuff, new stuff almost every day when you start looking, quote, really closely into minutia. So how in the heck, to be polite, how in the heck does Valerie Jarrett, celebrating her 50th birthday, having just won this, you know, exhausting campaign, I got to believe it was physically, it must be physically demanding to deal with everything that you're dealing with, and then to put up a government, to try to figure out, you know, all these people are going to, it's one thing to campaign, it's yet another thing to run the country, you know, to put the team together that you had to put together to vet all these people, to think through, you know, massaging egos and making something work and running something all this big. How in the heck did Valerie Jarrett have the time to actually know what was going on at the Clinton Foundation, and why would she have signed this document on November 16th, 2008, because it wasn't until the end of November that Hillary Clinton was formally announced in Chicago, I believe, as a candidate, as Barack Obama's choice to be Secretary of State. There was a lot of bad blood between the Clintons and the Obamas, at least among their advisors. And even, you know, you can't believe anything Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton write in a book. But if you take her book at face value, there's extensive verbiage in her book about, you know, she was walking in the woods near Chapel Hill. She likes to hang out in the woods, apparently. And Bill Clinton's cell phone rang, is the way she tells the story. And it was Barack Obama calling Hillary via Bill's cell phone in the woods. Now, why in the heck would the President of the United States not, and I assume Hillary had a cell phone. I mean, did he try her cell phone first and maybe she didn't have it with her in the woods? And, you know, there's a long, complex discussion about how, you know, Obama called Bill, they spoke, then they called back, and when they got back to Chappaqua in the house. And then, you know, Hillary claims, and of course, that you can't believe a word out of her mouth, that she turned down the position. And then, it was only towards the end of November, upon considerable reflection, that she decided that it would be a good move to accept it. So she accepted it then. All right. Well, why did Valerie Jarrett sign a memorandum of understanding on November 16th, 2008? And why did they hide the real version of it? The first version is an obvious, in my mind, it's an obvious forgery where somebody has tried to make a 1 look like a 2, an 11 look like a 12, by writing over the original version. How do we know this? The great Tom Fitton at Judicial Watch, his people put in a Freedom of Information Act request for documents, including this one, and they were provided one on December 3rd, 2013, where it says this is the real version. And I personally called up, I know the guys over there, so I called up their top investigator, Michael Morrison. I said, are you sure that this is the real version? They said, that is what we were told in an official Freedom of Information Act request that was actually complied with by Obama's State Department in December 3rd, 2013. So there are two versions of this MOU, one that the senators got.
Now, what was this memorandum? Why is this such a significant document? What was it supposed to achieve?
It was supposed to give the appearance that there was a conflict resolution mechanism, that in the event of a conflict of interest between the interests of the Clinton Foundation and the interests of Hillary Clinton's, or we the taxpayer in her role as Secretary of State, that there was a mechanism in place to ensure that the conflicts would be dealt with. And so in the recitals to this document, I mean, the first and obvious point here in the memorandum of understanding, who is the one person you would care most about having a conflict of interest? There are actually two people you can care most about having conflicts of interest, and that would be Bill Clinton and Chelsea Clinton. Okay? Those people are not parties to the Memorandum of Understanding. So the document itself is not drafted to deal, you know, appropriately with the potential conflicts involving Chelsea and her business interests and Bill and his business interests, and they're not covered. And more to the point, the document's not binding. It was an agreement drafted between the Clinton Foundation and Barack Obama's Presidential Transition Committee, which went out of existence when he was inaugurated. So it's a meaningless legal document. And for the two senators to go before their 98 colleagues and say, "Oh yeah, we got a solution. Here you go. We use the memorandum of understanding." Are you telling me there wasn't one lawyer in the room who said, "Hey, Mr. Obama, this thing doesn't work. You know, hey, Hillary, you realize this thing doesn't work." Not one lawyer noticed it. Not one of the august members of the 98 other senators. Nobody on their staff noticed that the memorandum of understanding was a meaningless document. And, you know, and beyond which, and this is something that, you know, various lawyers over decades have reminded me, particularly when you get into these complex takeover battles that I once was involved in, it's not, agreements are interesting, but what you need to check first are the statutes, the relevant statutes, federal, state, and foreign statutes. Those are the things, you know, whether you have an, if you, Treece Lee and Charles Martel get together and have an agreement to run a gambling ring, that doesn't mean that gambling is legal. You know, you got to check and make sure charity fraud is illegal. Public corruption is illegal. You know, you're not supposed to take gifts from foreign, female hating, you know, countries. You're not supposed to take money from those countries secretly in a foundation while you're deciding to sell those same countries military armaments to approve arms sales or to approve, you know, uranium. Well, you're just not supposed to do any of that. And a memorandum of understanding, a contract or otherwise, doesn't give you any cover. So, I mean, very clearly, when I look at this, it's an unbelievable mess. And, you know, here you have two senators, the president-elect and the secretary of state-elect, getting together, and they're in on a scheme. You got Bruce Lindsey, you got Valerie Jarrett, putting their signatures to an obviously fraudulent and grossly misleading document, and nobody seems to care. And I would start there. This is before Barack Obama is president of the United States. Valerie Jarrett is covering water for the incoming team. One second. A radio interview, so if you could be quiet. Here's Valerie Jarrett giving cover to the president-elect and the secretary of state-elect. It's ridiculous. Why did she do this? What did the Clintons have that would you know, cause Valerie Jarrett to participate in this fraud starting on November 16th, 2008. What did they have on her? What did they have on Barack Obama?
But in the meantime, business went on. You had not millions. According to the forensics that you have done, you estimate that over several years of the Clinton Foundation forming illegal spin-offs, if you will, and using the spin-offs to solicit funds, we're talking about billions of dollars here.
Well, absolutely. And you know, that's, I think here, when we look at this and we consider, you know, the long context, not just, you know, a couple of years, this is a tale of a bunch of connected insiders in both parties, in what I call the uniparty, Republicans and Democrat alike, deciding that this globalism, you know, slogans are great, and globalism sounds great. You know, I don't want to just be an American. I want to be a globalist. I want to be a citizen of the earth. You know, that sounds fantastic, especially if you're a crook. If what you're really talking about here is not, you know, a system of law, you're talking about unregulated globalism. You're talking about global markets as opposed to the U.S. market. You're talking about schemes that sound great, that gullible investors will give you money for, and that national governments will say, "Look, you know, this is too complicated for us to understand, and you know, it must be doing something right. They wouldn't try to pull off a scam on this magnitude," when indeed it is nothing more than a gigantic scam. You argue that you've got this foundation, you've got these, you know, famous people you put on the board. And you got the former president of the United States. He wouldn't be dumb enough to scam the world, would he? You know, he said, somebody must be checking. Well, the answer is nobody was really checking. And with that in hand, you fly around. There are 200-odd countries in the world, you know, and many big markets are actually relatively small countries. So you start going around to England and Germany and France and Sweden and Norway and all these places that have too much money and, you know, want to spread it around the world. And you start asserting that you're going to fight HIV/AIDS and climate change and economic inequality. You come up with, you know, I haven't really taken the mickey out of people yet and started arguing that they're in favor of, you know, lengthening the time of daylight, you know, by moving this position of the earth versus the sun so that we get more daylight or something like that. It's some ridiculous scheme, but people will believe anything. And, you know, unfortunately now, because of technology, by PayPal and other means, if you've got something that sounds good, like you're going to help the poor people of Haiti, you know, and a lot of gullible governments are out there, a lot of crooks and scam artists are out there, next thing you know, billions of dollars come towards your scam. And the big trick that I believe the Clintons and now others have been emulating is not only cooking the books, it's making sure that a large slice of this incoming money never reaches the charity, but instead goes off into tax haven accounts and real estate investments and other things in various, you know, nominee names that nobody is the wiser for. I mean, that, I think, is the game here. And I think this is a game that the Bill Clinton, as I said, figured out long before he became president. And, you know, when he wasn't caught, he got bolder and bolder. He and his people got bolder and bolder. And then they went around to their buddies. They said, hey, Tony Blair, you know, you have a foundation yet? Now Tony Blair's got a bunch of foundations. Same idea. Nobody really knows how much money was sent towards Mr. Blair and his foundations. His accounting is opaque. He's the former prime minister. He's got friends still in government. People give him a pass. There's a collection of there's several clubs. There's one, the Club de Madrid. Another thing, the Elders, that consist of former leaders of various countries. And, you know, Bill Clinton set you up. You get your own foundation if you're the former leader of Norway or England or France. Trudeau has his own foundation. And you go around the world, and, you know, these gullible do-gooders, these rich foundations, where in some cases, you know, the Rockefellers, Gates have guilty consciences, and they say, you know, well, this can't be really. I mean, Bill Clinton, we may not like it, but he's not going to be that crooked, you know. And they don't ask the types of tough questions that need to be asked, and they engage in this behavior, knowing full well that the IRS has other things to look at than trying to police charities, and so they've been able to get away with this scam for a long time. And this scam, people, you know, we've talked about this at length. We've got Corinne Brown. We've got now conservative Republican, Steve Stockman. They're both in prison Steve is not yet sentenced, but Corinne Brown's in prison for 5 years, and she's going to have to serve more than 40 months, I'm told, of her term. This is a 71 or 2-year-old woman, you know, spending perhaps her last days on earth in a federal prison over her role with two others, and an $800,000 charity fraud, whereas the Clintons are even now still scamming the world for their crooked charities, raising money. Last week, they raised a bunch of money, supposedly. No one has an accounting yet. No one even really knows where the dinner was held yet. But they held some event last week, boldly, and as the FBI and Department of Justice are indeed investigating the Clinton Foundation, likely for fraud and public corruption, they're nonetheless going out, and they did last week, and they raised money using the telephone, using the mails, using the internet, in personal meetings across state lines, across international boundaries, perhaps. They were committing charity fraud boldly in front of the world last week and bragging about it.
What do you think? I mean, we've asked each other this question, and you've talked about it, and we still are not close to the answer. What might the Clintons have on the Obamas?
Well, without going into the ancient history, just going into his period as an adult, you know, there are still major questions. This guy, Wayne Allen Root, and I know he's a partisan, a Republican, but he was at Columbia with Barack Obama. And he claims that, you know, there's no record that he can find. And it's actually, my 40th reunion at Yale is happening today. And today I got my digital version of the class, you know, the 40th anniversary book. And, you know, if you're a legitimate member of a class at an Ivy League university, you can go right into the library you know, at that university, and you can find out, you can go back and read the school newspaper. You know, I happened to have published two articles in the Yale Daily News when I was there. I was very involved in the Yale Political Union. And so, you know, you'll find me in the Yale archives. You know, and Barack Obama's life, his adult life, is a cipher. And you've got to believe that the Clintons, who pioneered the use of the war room and who bitterly resent, I think, Hillary Clinton, as she throws, when she's up at Chappaqua throwing Bill's glass figurines around because she gets mad, one of the things she's got to be maddest about is Barack Obama. Because if Barack Obama had not run in 2008, Hillary Clinton would likely have won the presidency and been reelected in 2012. But Barack Obama, so she must be really mad about that. And, you know, I know, and I know he's controversial, but he's just a personal friend of mine, Jerry Corsi, and he has told me that the reason he wrote that book, Where's the Birth Certificate, is that Clinton operatives approached him about doing it. So, you know, there's no question in my mind that the Clintons would have, you know, paid, as they like to do, had people, the law firms, pay private investigators to dig through the muck on Barack Obama. And, you know, what they found, we don't yet know. Maybe they found his real resume of accomplishment, in quotes, in the 5 years after he, in theory, was graduated from Columbia University. Who was he actually working for? Where did he live? What did he really do? You know, what was the trajectory of his career through Harvard Law School? How were his grades? How did he become president of the law? They would have poked through all that kind of stuff. And whatever they found was potent enough to cause Valerie Jarrett to put her signature on a document dated November 16th. It's in her handwriting, 2008, 12 days after the pivotal historic election. Her signature is on a complete fraudulent document. And she's supposedly representing the interests of Barack Obama. Did she check the Clinton Foundation archive at that point? They hadn't filed their tax returns on November 16th, 2008. They'd signed them on November 14th, 2008. You could see that via the link. The link, what work did she do to satisfy herself that the Clinton Foundation on November 16th, 2008 was actually in compliance with any law? Because it wasn't. You know, so this is an incredible indictment of her. Either she was just told, look, you know, don't even waste your time checking it. Here's a pen. You know, take this pen, sign this document. Don't ask me any tough questions. Well, you know, I don't know. If I'm were asked to be, you know, the second or the most powerful unelected official in the Obama administration, and I'm treated this way on November 16th, 2008, before he's sworn in, imagine how he's going to treat me after he's sworn in. I wouldn't take the job. So there's something very fishy going on in that time frame. And we do now know, and of course, Donald Trump and his people will know, that Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett were separately interviewed by the FBI. And I want to say the December time frame, over the FBI's investigation into, you know, whether or not people were attempting to sell Barack Obama's Senate seat to the highest bidder. And how involved was Rod Blagojevich in this process? And Rod Blagojevich is in prison still. Now, 10 years later, he is still in prison. So there must be a record of what Blagojevich said. There must be a record of what Barack Obama said under oath to the FBI. And Valerie Jarrett, under oath to the FBI, what was actually said there? And, you know, how much of that was fed back to the Clintons, maybe?
Let's spend some time connecting the dots overseas. While it seems that not much is happening, something is happening here in the United States, but we're seeing a lot more action overseas in terms of investigation of the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons themselves.
Yeah. Well, so what happened here is, and I, you know, this is some inside baseball, but I'm, you know, perhaps that's not the right sport, as you'll hear in a second. But what happened is in France, there was actually, there is a public record in France. It's in French, but you can use Google Translate. That's what I do. And you can see that the French government opened an investigation of the largest donor to the Clinton Foundation, Unitaid, by December, I believe it was, of 2009. They opened an investigation, and we know this because there's a report, an initial report, and an amended report, and then there's transcript of testimony before the Senate in the French Senate. So there was a report that missed the heart of the Clinton Foundation fraud, but nonetheless reached some important conclusions by 2010 and 11. One of the important conclusions it reached was that 90% of the money spent by the Clinton Foundation to buy HIV/AIDS medicines was spent on generic HIV/AIDS medicines manufactured in India. And likely, we know from, you know, exhaustive work, that likely a goodly percentage of that money, we're talking here of over $250 million, was likely, a good percentage of that was likely sent to a crooked firm called Randoxy, which we now know manufactured adulterated HIV/AIDS medicines, which were distributed across Africa and certain countries in Asia and in the Caribbean to desperately poor people who, in theory, were being treated with HIV/AIDS medicines. And this is, you know, this is really, there's no good way to kill somebody, but hooking somebody up with HIV/AIDS medicines who either doesn't have HIV or has it, and then allowing them to be prescribed with adulterated drugs is consigning these people to a horrific death. In certain cases, with certain types of these adulterated drugs, the way you die is your skin melts off your body. I mean, there's no, that is, you know, that's awful. It's an incredibly painful way to die. A disgusting way to die. I don't know, good way to die, but that's a horrible way. Anyway, so the French government did investigate this, but they failed to see, and we wonder why they failed to see, you know, this obvious Clinton Foundation fraud. Well, let's refresh everyone's memory. What was going on in 2011? What was going on in 2011 is that Nicolas Sarkozy was trying to get his arms, his mitts, on Libyan money, the situation in Libya. And the United States and Libya were cooperating to, even though Muammar Gaddafi supposedly wanted to, you know, come in from the cold and be a good corporate citizen, a good global citizen, whatever, they nonetheless killed him. And they conspired, our government and the French government conspired, it would seem, to, you know, get their mitts on billions of dollars of Libyan money, the people of Libya's money, you know, mess up Libya, which remains a basket case, a failed state ever since. There's something to investigate there, and it is, you know, public knowledge now that the most powerful person in France, Eliane Houlette, who is holds a, there's a, you know, official position where you're basically a nonstop Robert Mueller, except that you have authority and credibility and a real staff. This person has been investigating the Clinton Foundation since August of last year. Alongside the head of the equivalent of the FBI. And, you know, it's dangerous ground to go over, but this is the person, Eliane Houlette, is the person who stopped François Fillon from being the leader of France. And instead, we now have Emmanuel Macron. So the French have every reason to look at this. They have channeled billions of dollars to Unitaid, a portion of which, $650 million, has gone from Unitaid to the Clinton Foundation since early 2007. And we have, out of this publicly available information, we actually have the dates that monies were wired to the Clinton Foundation in 2007, 8, 9, when the Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS initiative legally did not exist. The French government nonetheless sent about $300 million towards an entity that didn't exist. Now, you know, I have always been under the impression that large governments like France are large bureaucracies, and that it's really difficult and dangerous to, you know, engage in a deal where you're stealing, in effect, diverting $300 million out of, you know, this entity in Switzerland. France contributes the money to the entity in Switzerland, then Unitaid sends the $650 million to the Clinton Foundation. That's a large amount of money. You know, if I'm sitting there down in whatever, you know, prison with or without air conditioning in which Corinne Brown currently is sitting, and I'm listening to, you know, this broadcast, I'm fuming if I'm Corinne Brown. You mean to tell me that the Clintons diverted $650 million to an entity that doesn't exist out of Switzerland and nobody's doing anything about this? So we can hope that the French are going to do something about it. But as a guess, what they're waiting for, and, you know, when I started on this, and I'll call it a crusade, when I started on this crusade back in 2015, you know, what I was told by people who know these governments well is, look, you know, we don't really want to, you know, cheese off, as the English say, somebody with a vitriolic temper of Hillary Clinton, who could well be the next president of the United States. We don't want to open that door. Thank you very much. Let's wait and see what happens with the election, and maybe if she loses, we might do something about it. Well, you know, it's taken
Charles,
a while.
We're running out of time.
Okay.
And certainly not out of questions. So let's schedule for next week. But in the meantime, people can see your reports because you have a program called Sunday with Charles. And, gee, it seems as if the only thing you talk about is the Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton Foundation. So I'm sure that could you tell people a bit about the program quickly and how to access it? And your files, by the way, are at they're available. All of the documents supporting what you are saying are posted and are available. Anybody can go look at them at charlesortel.com.
Sure, I'll be quick. So we just did our 78th two-hour show on average yesterday, and in about 50 cases, we've had PDF files that allow that our viewers can pull down and look through and follow the links of. There's a very nice lady on Twitter. I don't know her real name, but she goes by La Fleur Productions, who has put together a summary online of all this. And there have, you know, been many, I think in many of the interviews with you, Eutrice, are up. She tries to put them all in one place. But yeah, we provide this information free of charge. We hope that investigators are looking at it. We hope that listeners send episodes like this one today and other episodes of Sunday with Charles and Closing In to these government investigators. And, you know, we believe this Horowitz report is going to be dropping on Monday. And a lot of focus now is going to go on this, thanks to all of the time you've given me, Eutrice. I really appreciate it.
Oh, not at all. This is what we're supposed to be doing. So if the Horowitz report does come in on Monday, let's be prepared to talk about it on Monday, but certainly by Tuesday.
That's a good, I'm delighted. It's supposed to be 400 pages, and Tuesday would be a great day because that's also Bill Clinton's book is coming out Tuesday, and of all things, they're calling it The President is Missing. Should have been The President's Moral Compass is Missing.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today, and as always, extremely informative, and I hope people are, you know, following the sequence that we've been doing, trying to get to the heart of this Clinton Foundation, which, as you call it, is the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in history. Thanks, Charles. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Eutrice.
And that brings us to the end of our program. Thank you for listening and tuning in. And I want you to appreciate the fact that what is being discussed here? You're not going to get any place else. Keep it here. Expanding Mind with Eric Davis is next. We'll see each other tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.